Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We had a chat back in the summer about the Titans could be a better team this year, but end up with a worse record than last year. Like we went through scenarios of how that could happen with the schedule and how the offense was going to progress. You would feel better about this team moving forward than you did at the end of last season. Well, right now they're not a better team than last year's team to this point. So what do you think just of the assessment of this 2018 Titans team at the halfway point and what needs to change in a self-evaluation moving forward over the second half of the season to leave you feeling like they are a better team than where they left off with Mike Mularkey? 615-737-1045, our number. We're wanting to get into some things that we know must be addressed if this team is going to be considered quote-unquote better. So we'd love for you to chime in. I think some of the things are just so blatantly obvious. We want to go a layer or two deeper than that. So instead of just saying Mariota needs to play better, we're going to try to give you reasons why and where.
Well, and so to be specific, are we asking what needs to happen for us to believe this team is better, or that this team is making progress in the right direction? I think those are two different things.
I think we need to discuss how this team ends up being better. There were high expectations when you make a coaching change the way they did. Expectations are high.
Where they came from,
and they don't deny that. They admitted that when they made the change. So I think you have to grade this team on a high bar, and that's why I think you could make the argument in the offseason that, and it's, we still could end up this way, where, you know what, they didn't make the postseason, but this is a team that is better overall top to bottom. Right now you can't say that. Cannot say that because of the offensive issues. The offensive scheme has changed, but the scoreboard has stayed exactly the same.
Do you want me to begin?
Yeah, sure.
With my answer to this? It's easy just to say, coming into the season, I would have said win the division. They still have a chance to win the division. Win the division, and even if they lose their first playoff game, I feel like it was a job well done by this new coaching staff. That's what I would like to see in the regular season. That's still out in front of them. It's still a possibility. They're 2-0 against this division. They've got winnable games coming up against the division. That's what I'd like to see just from a nuts and bolts standpoint of what they need to do on the field. For me to feel good about this team and feel like they've either improved this year or will improve big time in the future, we have to see a lot of offensive progression with Matt LaFleur, with Marcus Mariota. What do I specifically want to see? I want to see Marcus Mariota get on the same page with someone not named Tajae Sharpe. What I see increasingly is his security blanket, which was Delanie Walker, has become Tajae Sharpe. We've talked to Greg Cosell about this. We've talked to Blake Bedingfield about this. Apparently, Tajae Sharpe is the only receiver on the roster that has a feel for the game, the level where he can get open against zone coverage. Mariota has a sense that he knows how to get a little bit of separation, and he's going to Tajae Sharpe a lot. If this team is ever going to click on all cylinders, Corey Davis and Marcus Mariota need to get on that same page. Corey Davis has to learn the nuance of his position to where Marcus Mariota feels confident going to him more often. If that starts to happen, suddenly a team that ranks, I think, 31st in explosive plays in the league, let's say they get up into the low 20s in that category. Let's say they start to connect on some big plays down the field because Mariota suddenly is more comfortable with Corey Davis. If that happens, the wins will start to pile up, and suddenly I feel better about this team moving forward. Right now, the biggest disappointment is Matt LaFleur, is Marcus Mariota, is Marcus Mariota's receivers. Matt LaFleur has been a bust so far. And it's got me asking the question, why was he not hired in Atlanta when they had a chance to promote him as the offensive coordinator? He needs to be better. He can be better. To get better, though, Marcus Mariota's got to be better. Corey Davis has to be better. They need to get on the same page.
And I want to phrase this because you mentioned if they win the division and get into the playoffs, you'll feel good about things. You could say the same thing about last year where they win 9 games, they get into the playoffs and win a game. But really, they went 9-7, won in overtime against Cleveland, then lost in December, backed their way into the postseason. Had to come back against Kansas City only to get handled by New England, where columns were being written that you could go ahead and write in Sharpie that the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl again. So while you feel good about the progression, did you really feel good about top to bottom how that team performed compared to the rest of the league and compared specifically to the AFC? So that is the bar that has been set when you make a coaching change. After the performance of last year.
I know players hate the term bad win. There were some unimpressive wins last year. I'm not going to say bad. They're right. All good in the NFL. Sure. There were unimpressive wins to get to 9-7. If I'm looking at one good win this year, right now, it's the Texans with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. I don't think the Eagles is that impressive a win at home when you look at what the Eagles are right now. I mean, I can't really go up and down this season and say, boy, you know, of the three wins,
there were some
really good ones.
The Eagles win was impressive. That was the best game I've seen at Nissan Stadium.
It was an impressive game, but at the end of the year, I think we're going to look at that win with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback and be more impressed with that over the Texans.
Here's the problem, right? We wanted an identity for this team for a long time. Ken Wisenhunt was a disaster, and there was no real identity. I swapped texts, by the way, with Wisenhunt after. I didn't get to see him in London, but I swapped texts with him very pleasant and nice. We wanted an identity for this team, and Malarkey brought an identity in the exotic Smash Mouth, right? Now, we found that identity to be limiting. And so this staff came and said, well, our identity, I'm paraphrasing here, and this isn't a direct quote, but what they were going to do was they were going to game by game figure it out. They were going to game by game transform into whatever they needed to be, which sounded good. And it looked good at 3-1 because they did do it. They figured out a way against Houston and against Jacksonville to morph into what they needed to be to win those games. And when I asked LaFleur, when we had the big conversation about how do you get into a rhythm without Delanie Walker, he said, "It's who's the matchup, you know? Who are we going against? It depends on the game." And that sounds good, and I like it, and I want it to work, but it hasn't. And so I'm stuck. It's kind of a chicken and an egg thing, right? I want them to have something to fall back on in times of crisis when the figuring out something for this game isn't working, and they don't have that.
And
that
we bring this
rhythm thing.
We bring this discussion up right now because at the halfway point of the season, they should be making a turn offensively to where they want to get into the black, right? Right now they're in the red. And averaging 15 points per game in this NFL is not good. Not good. And the wide receiver drops are piling up. The run game found life against L.A., but for the most part has been invisible. There are issues. One week from today, they'll be in Dallas facing the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Adjustments need to be made, especially offensively, with what we've seen over the first half of the season. 615-737-1045, our number. 615-737-1045. Look, the offensive inconsistencies, we can sum it up by saying, look, we have seen the ups and downs of Mariota this year. We have seen the drops, the several and many drops by these wide receivers in big moments. Yards have been left on the field. Points have been left on the field because of that. You've got the run game that's been invisible, but finally, I think, found some life with Deion Lewis, who should be the primary ball carrier right now, I think, for the effort that he gave against the Chargers. Pass protection issues. And we'll mention injuries later, but let's go with what we've actually seen on film and what we've seen in person with all of these games. The offense has put together drives that feature a nice duo, a nice combination of the run and the pass. But for many reasons, this is an offense that gets 3 points instead of 7. And that was the criticism of the offense that they just moved away from.
2 years ago.
That is exactly why they're averaging 15 points per game.
2 years ago is one of the best red zone offenses we'd ever seen in this city.
Yeah, they were like 70% or something.
They were phenomenal. What do they have to lean on? They've got nothing to lean on. That's the most disturbing thing.
That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable based on the offseason hype that was behind this team and this offense.
And the biggest thing to lean on, Chad mentioned, Tajae Sharpe on third down is one of the best things they have to lean on right now. I mean, good for Tajae Sharpe, but bad for everybody else that's been passed by Tajae Sharpe.
And to me, it's on the receivers to have a connection with the quarterback. If you're looking for where the onus should be placed, the receivers need to get on the same page with Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, I would go to Tajae Sharpe and say, you're developing some confidence. Marcus is developing some confidence in you.
Well, here's why.
How?
Here's how.
Tell me.
Tajae Sharpe is across the middle of the field. Marcus Mariota is most effective throwing between the hashes. And when he faces a zone coverage, Tajae Sharpe sits down in the zone and makes a catch. Marcus is throwing outside the numbers a lot to Corey Davis. And while that worked in man coverage when they pressed him, against Philadelphia, it's not working against the zone coverage with the Chargers. That's my answer to that.
I don't know if it's man or zone, but he's throwing to Taywan Taylor in the middle of the field when the alligator arms that one killed them in London.
Well, that's not a Marcus issue.
No, I know. But, I mean, if you're losing confidence in everybody on the field except Tajae Sharpe, what do you do? Jalston Fowler ain't fixing it.
You generate confidence. I mean... I know that's
well, he's just got to keep throwing. He's just got to keep throwing.
That's right.
Keep throwing it.
And Paul, you've done this the last few games. I've noticed where on certain throws and downs and distances, you see options that are not even assessed.
Well, I see one thing that I can't stand where he looks deep, and then he comes off the deep and takes a sack when Deion Lewis is wide open as the checkdown, and he doesn't seem to go to the hot receiver. Also, if he's looking deep, can't he make that throw in a way where only his guy can catch it? I mean, that's part of quarterbacking, right? I'm looking deep, and it's not ideal. My guy hasn't won. But I could put it out there where it's not going to get intercepted, and my guy can go make a huge play on it. Now, I don't have to have tremendous confidence there. All I have to do is make a throw where it's going to be incomplete or caught by my guy. You've got to make that throw. Or... come off it faster and throw it to Deion Lewis out there. He's in space. And somebody would say, Tom Gower, who's an analytics guy based in Chicago, who's a big Titans follower, said he feels that linebacker lurking. Well, I see quarterbacks all over. I watched the league yesterday. I watched Red Zone all day yesterday. If that linebacker, who's a mile away from Deion Lewis, is a concern for Marcus Mariota, there's a problem. You have got to be able to make that throw without worrying about that linebacker. You've got to be able to make it. Two things I took away from watching Red Zone yesterday. A, a lot of teams have a lot of weapons. Titans aren't one of them. B, there's some crap. I mean, you watch San Francisco against Arizona. Those are two bad football teams. The Titans are too close to those teams. Teams playing a backup quarterback because the quarterback's hurt. Teams playing a rookie quarterback because they're on the rebuild.
I have big questions about the weapons on this offense, Paul, to reiterate what you were saying, and Hutton, your point also on the hype this offseason wasn't centered around a lack of playmakers or a lack of good players on offense, and I'm with you. This coaching staff did not inherit a dumpster fire. They inherited pressure. They inherited a 9-7 football team that won a playoff game.
Which is rare in the NFL to inherit.
They inherited what everyone believed to be a strong culture and strong leadership in that locker room. To me, that's where I'm not going to give them a pass on this. If the offense regresses, I don't want to hear about, boy, it's another offensive coordinator for Mariota. And, you know, this is to be expected. They were hired. They weren't hired to start a slow rebuild. They didn't inherit a 2-14 team that they have time to work with. They inherited a situation, and we were told, and this was the belief, that when they came in, they would improve. I'm not saying they're going to go win the Super Bowl in year one, but that you'd see improvements in the offense because the offense would be more current. It'd be more modern, and this would fit Marcus Mariota well. They'd go out and let Marcus Mariota play. Now, because that hasn't happened, I think it's fair to question Marcus Mariota, and some of the weapons also. But ultimately, the big change this offseason was coaching staff. So to me, the coaching staff, and specifically the offensive coaching staff here, faces the most questions moving forward.
And if the receivers catch the football on some plays that were dialed up in the correct way and delivered by Mariota, and I thought Mariota was fine against L.A. in London.
I thought he was too.
Slow starting and the bad pick. I mean, what does he not see? Who was that?
It was a terrible
Ingram?
Pick.
It was Ingram. Twice. What, was he invisible to Marcus? Because he's right there. He threw one in his belly that should have been picked, and he threw one into his armpit that was just a dumb throw.
Well, aside from that, though, the receivers let him down in this game. Let the team down.
Absolutely.
There were yards there, drive-extending plays that, not just this game, but you can point to other games as well. LaFleur also, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, because we discussed this as a big headline in training camp about how three wide in L.A. does not necessarily mean three wide in Tennessee, and how he would take the pieces he has available and make the most out of those pieces as everything comes together. While we saw that against game plans for Houston and Jacksonville, we haven't seen that with the healthy offense together. I'm waiting on that. That to me is the key to all of this. With the healthy pieces, with Conklin there, Lawan is back, hopefully the two guards can get healthy. Mariota's going to feel as good as he has, right, moving forward now. And you have the three receiving options. You don't have Delanie Walker, but not having Delanie Walker can't cripple you to the point where you can only score two touchdowns a game.
I agree, but I do think there's an undercurrent that needs to be mentioned. You know, that without Walker and Matthews, you lost 40% of your receptions from last year, and that they don't have guys who are good enough to make up for that, particularly at tight end, but at receiver too. I mean, who's the one guy that we've seen? Who's the one? Name me guys who've gotten better on offense in lieu of the loss. Tajay Sharp, keep going.
You can't find any.
There isn't one.
I've got a message for MSC2134 on Twitter. Stop being so soft. We're talking about the issues with the Titans. If you're incapable of hearing about offensive issues with a team that can't score touchdowns, I can't help you. Anytime we bring up remote criticism about the Titans, this guy is just so angry. Deal with it. Tell us what the issues are with this team. Stop talking about and criticizing us for criticizing the issues with this team and start coming up with solutions.
What do you want to hear? Rainbows? Lollipops?
Well, I mean, the rainbow at the end of the tunnel is they play Houston again. They have a chance to sweep them.
Colts twice.
You still have the Colts twice. And Jacksonville is in just a dumpster fire.
Speaking of lollipops, did you see the logos on the Coliseum field? The way that they tried to cover up the USC logo with the Rams helmet, it looked like one of those big swirly lollipops like that you would get for your daughter, Chad.
Yeah.
Like, or that Kramer hat in the backwards episode. Yes. That's what it looked like.
And we go to the phones and we say hello to Ricky. What's up, Ricky?
Hey, guys. So if I was the coaching staff, and I was trying to make adjustments to how to course correct this season, the first thing I do when I do my self-evaluation, which I'm assuming they're doing these 2 weeks, is I'd recognize we don't have an elite quarterback, we don't have elite weapons at the wide receiver spot, and our quarterback is only functional if a lot of things are going right around him. The scheme that the Titans are trying to run is important to have wide receivers that can get off the press consistently and get open. And then you have to have a quarterback who can hit them on time. Marcus Mariota is not really one of his strengths. He's somebody who needs everything. He needs the line to be perfect, everything to be perfect. So you have to run the ball. How many teams in the NFL that don't have an elite quarterback are winning consistently if they're not rushing for 100 yards? They don't have that runner who's doing that. And with the scheme the Titans run, that's not the way this OC wants to work. But they've done it. They can run the ball. Lewis and Henry can get it done. Lewis can get it done way more than Henry can, but Henry can get you 3-4 yards on occasion. He can also lose you a lot of yards. But they got to start there. They got to establish the run game. They have to be consistent with it. Even if it's not working early on, be consistent with it. You don't have to throw a 5-yard pass every time. Just be consistent with the run. And I think that would really open up the offense for Mariota. There's no play action. And you can't do screens if everybody knows you can't throw it deep. So run the ball, open it up, get the defense on their heels, and then start having Mario throw. He's not good enough to throw first and then open up the run.
Stick with us. Stick with us, Ricky. Yep. Stick with us.
Yep.
Here's the thing that we heard about the run game coming into the season. Is all going to be built around outside zone. I don't remember seeing, like, distinct outside zone runs with any regularity lately. Do you?
No. They don't run.
Where the hell is it?
The OC wants to throw the ball. He wants to be a quick pass offense. That he wants to open the running through the throws, but your quarterback ain't good enough for it. So you got to run it. And if it's zone, power, whatever it is they're doing, they need to do it more. And even if it's not working early, stick with it. Because your defense is good enough to keep you in the game. But if you get Mariota going negative early, he's not good enough to come out of that.
Well, I agree with that some, but I want more Deion Lewis early. I wrote this morning why I have trouble with Derrick Henry as a volume back. I think in this day and age, to be a volume back, and I ran through a lot of numbers this morning in this piece that I wrote, to be a volume back in this day and age, you know what you have to do? Catch the ball. Derrick Henry catches one pass for every 14 carries. You know what the good backs in the league do who are volume backs? They catch one about every five carries.
What do the backs do in the offenses that Matt LaFleur has been involved in? They catch the ball, but they also establish the run. Everything they do is keyed around the rushing attack. Even in L.A., they have Todd Gurley. Go back to Atlanta when LaFleur was there. And Matt Ryan's MVP year, they ran the football very well. So, and they did it with two or three options.
And I think that's a big piece of this is they can't figure out what to do with Henry.
I thought Henry's best run against the Chargers was straight down the middle, right at the heart of that Chargers defense. Ran it right at them. Wasn't a massive gain. It was just a solid gain where he lowers his shoulder and gets ahead.
But based on what Deion Lewis was doing in that game...
Yes.
Most of the time when you say Derrick Henry in the backfield, weren't you saying, I wish it was Lewis?
Yes. And I've said that all year, honestly.
I don't know what the formula is for Derrick Henry. I mean,
and I don't know.
We've talked about this, but Derrick Henry, it's so funny to say, you know, a running back is at his best when he's got a gaping hole and he's running full speed down the field. Well, of course. Yeah. Any athlete's at their best when they have that much room.
How often are you creating?
It's difficult to design an offense where you get multiple opportunities where you're running full steam ahead.
David is next. Hey, David.
Hey, what's up, fellas? All right, looking at the AFC South standings, looking at points allowed, you know, the Titans, their defense is not the issue. We all know that, even though Malcolm Butler has had his issues this year and we have no pass rusher. I mean, but that's something we'll have to take care of maybe in the draft or, you know, trading it for next year. The offense, you know, points forward, we're dead last. You know, I think, yeah, within a touchdown, maybe two, three games, we would have had a win. But you don't want that. You don't see New England, you know, the Rams doing that, winning by two or three. I mean, if that's going to be it, then, you know, we might get to the playoffs, and then the first round, you know, we're out. I mean, we can't be a legit team. Marcus Mariota, I mean, I hate the guy, you know. I mean, not I hate the guy, but, I mean, I hate giving the guy all the heat, but he just needs to man up. I mean, you don't see Brady getting 11 sacks in a game and just patting their lineman on the head and, hey, it's okay.
Don't
you know,
jump,
we'll get him
to,
next
don't
time.
Jump to comparing him to Brady. Don't never jump to comparing a quarterback somewhere else to Brady. Compare him to somebody else, not Brady.
Well, I mean, the question would be, and Paul, I only bring this question up because you're talking a lot about the psychology of the receivers room, the receiving room, and personalities and attitude and everything else. Well, let's examine the personality type of Marcus Mariota. How many great quarterbacks in the history of the NFL have had his personality type? He's not exactly a type A guy. He's not... You don't have to be rah-rah, but you got to have a little killer.
What's interesting, though, is Ron Davenport tweeted out what Mariota was telling the team prior to the Baltimore game, pregame.
What was it?
F-bombs.
Yeah. He was letting it out.
I like to hear that.
So, I mean, that is a type A personality that he was doing, and then they completely no-showed in that game.
Yeah, well, he's got more of it than we see.
Is it too little too late with that? Is that a consistent approach? I'm asking the question because we're bringing this in when we talk about the receivers. You can also ask the question about the quarterback.
I am not – whenever I evaluate the issues with this team, I have to consider that he is injured in a game against Miami, misses two games. So this is an offense that didn't have the starting QB for the majority, if not all, of three games. And that's averaging 15 points per game after week eight. Now, two of the game plans after Mariota gets hurt, the Houston game where we all praise the coaching staff for putting points on the board in a way that didn't necessarily mean Blaine Gabbert was driving the offense down the field to win games.
Find a way.
And against Jacksonville, where you didn't even want Mariota throwing a pass. That's why they didn't start the guy, and he had to play in the first quarter. And for whatever reason, Jacksonville never adjusted to the running quarterback. So that's five games into the season now. Then you get to Philadelphia, where they air it out. And it works because the receivers went up and made plays, and Corey Davis played like an elite wide receiver for four quarters.
And I got tricked by that game.
Buffalo was a terrible loss and a bad performance. Baltimore should have been a game where the team showed up and played well in what could be as it looked on as a wild card type win or loss for a team in December. They no-showed. It was embarrassing. And then we saw what happened in L.A. where I thought Mariota was okay. So the issues to me don't start with number eight. There are issues with what's around him not doing things up to the level of expectation. And we can start with the run game with Derrick Henry. We can start with the passing attack and specifically Corey Davis. But those two guys, to me, charge everything moving forward over the final half of the season.
I agree that you don't start with Mariota on the list of issues if you're ranking them. But would you agree that he has been an issue?
He has been up and down. And
he's, he's on the list of issues.
I'm clearly saying he's an issue whenever I mention Buffalo and Baltimore.
Yeah,
but there are not many games.
His receivers don't show up. One game his line lets him get sacked 10 times and puts him in a shell. There's always something. And
games,
by the way, that game that he gets sacked 11 times, look at what Baltimore did yesterday
and
against
the other
Carolina.
Two games,
they got destroyed.
He leads the overtime drive against Philadelphia and then leads a drive where they throw a pass to Luke Stockard to trail by one and then go for two. So, I mean, we've seen good moments as well as the inconsistent performances in Buffalo. And of course, everybody was terrible against Baltimore.
But I think this whole market and the whole fan base here is getting sick of waiting.
Sure.
For everything. Sick of waiting for Corey Davis. Sick of waiting for Marcus Mariota. Sick of waiting for Matt LaFleur. Sick of waiting for some pass rush to show.
But that's fair.
Sick of Malcolm Butler being the nickelback for what he's making.
That is the
sick of.
That is the whole reason we're having this discussion, though, at the bye week. It's because ownership is sick of waiting. That's why they changed coaches last year. That's why they changed offenses to fit the quarterback in this offense. That's why we're having the discussion today.
And here we are waiting.
What's up, Isaiah?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Hey, glad you guys are back, all safe.
Thank you, man.
Good to be back.
Hey, love you guys. And Paul, after last night, I never thought we would probably agree on anything today, but you are right. I am sick and tired of waiting. I've been saying for 2-3 years now, this is our time. And before you know it, if I keep on saying it, the time is going to pass us up. We don't, you know what, fans?
Same thing.
What would Mike Mularkey have done with no Delaney? The same thing, if not worse. So
we're giving the ball to Henry 50 times a game.
Exactly. It's even worse, Paul. And the thing is, these receivers, has Tajay, who's the longest receiver that's been on this team? Tajay Sharp? He's the longest tenured receiver that we have right now? So
yeah.
I would say Tajay Sharp is the number one receiver until Corey Davis can take over that room as the number five pick in the first round as the number one receiver. We need that. I don't care about anything else. We only lose to Baltimore because nobody did their job, including the coaches. All the other games, I blame it on the receivers. I don't blame Marcus. I don't blame anybody. If we catch the balls that we need to catch, we will be okay. And now I'm looking at John Robinson. Where's the trade deadline? What are we doing? What are we doing? We need
probably
to bring
nothing.
Somebody in that can catch the ball. And I got it. And I got one more thing for you, Paul. I don't care how much money we spend as long as we win. Damage is done. Tighten up, fellas.
We haven't heard For the Boys in a while.
Yeah, For the Boys.
Yeah, that's disappeared.
What's becoming For the Boys?
What happened?
Yeah, to start playing like crap, For the Boys goes to bed.
Not a lot of hashtags being sent out by the Titans Twitter account on For the Boys.
I'm writing that down on my list. What's happened to what has
I'm still,
happened?
I'm sure it's still there.
11 sacks, .. hashtag For the Boys.
For the Boys.
AJ is next. Hey, By the way, another topic that Paul gets to write about at PaulKowarski.com is he writes it down.
Write AJ, this down.
Got that.
What's up, AJ? What's up, AJ?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey,
look. Look, I came front. I'm a Cowboy fan by heart, but I love the Titans coming from East Nashville.
Okay.
Titans just need to do what they do. Everybody keep on talking about, what about Derrick Henry? What about Derrick Henry? Does it ever hurt to play traditional football? You know, if you really want to make things better, put a fire upon everybody's glutes. You know, however you want to do it. To let everybody know that job is on the nose, including the coaches.
Put a what? Where?
Just like your job. You have a boss. If your boss tell you this is what you need to talk about, this is where you need to go at, can't nobody out here get mad about how you going about it, because you're doing exactly what your boss says. Now, your boss might not know what needs to go on, but by you doing what he's saying, everybody looking at you
so
wrong.
So you think if his boss says run better, the problem will be solved?
I think the boss is telling them. I think the boss need to be held more accountable, far more like the offensive coordinator.
So if what's the accountability for the offensive coordinator? Play better offense or what?
Own up to it. Own up to it. Mark Mulocky wasn't that bad. Sometimes we might.
They own up to it. Every time they stink, Mike Vrabel says, "Man, we got to coach better. That's just not good enough."
Man, look,
we got to get back to work.
Stinking for a minute right now. All right, guys.
I just don't understand the accountability you want. Like, he's not hiding from anything. He knows it's not been good.
Well, the accountability is you were hired to improve the team, and I'm sure they know that.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think they're ducking the pressure that they're. I'm not saying year one pressure as in their jobs. I'm saying they know what the Titans did a year ago. They know why they were brought in. This is an ownership group that wants to win and win right now. And they believe they have a roster that can win right now.
You think Mike Vrabel's coming back from 4 days in the Caribbean? I guarantee you he's not. Probably snuck off to watch his son play. I think Boston College played Friday night. I bet he snuck off, watched that, came right back to the office.
I hope Marcus Mariota spent the bye week with Corey Davis.
I'm so down on the receivers. If he spent the bye week with Corey Davis, I hope Corey Davis spoke loudly enough that he could hear.
He wants to see fire. Here's the positive for me in the three losses compared to what we've seen in Jacksonville. Unlike what we've seen in Jacksonville, this is a Titans team that's not imploding from
not
within.
Fighting each other.
They're not fighting each other.
Running up $50,000 bar tabs in London.
They're not pointing fingers.
It's a misunderstanding.
You've got a Jacksonville team that's in turmoil. Blake Bortles isn't the franchise quarterback. And everyone knows that, and there's nothing they can do about it. They can play Cody Kessler, but again, there's nothing they can do about it. But they don't have a run game because Leonard Fournette is what the offense is built around, and that's why they had to trade for Carlos Hyde, because they don't have a run game to center everything around. And now you have all of these alphas pointing fingers at each other in a locker room.
Well, you have quote unquote leaders
like Jalen Ramsey, who want to give one-word answers now when things aren't going well.
At least they have some alphas.
Well, here's to Hutton's point about the Jags. Then if you're the Titans, go win this division.
That's right.
Inaction is, you cannot do it right now. Go trade for a receiver. Make something happen. Go win the division. The Jags are a dumpster fire right now. Houston's not that good. The Colts are getting better. You still play them twice. I would still say the Colts are the worst team in the division in terms of rosters. Go win the division.
You know where you need to beat the Colts? With the pass rush. You better find it.